Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 546. We've added a second Nerdist Podcast Live at San Diego Comic-Con, so that'll be Saturday, July 26th at 7:30 p.m. We're going to announce the guests pretty soon, but tickets are going fast. I hate that phrase. Because it sounds manipulative, right? Like, oh, you better get on this or you're going to lose tickets that you're not going to... I mean, if you want to go, you would just buy the tickets. If you don't want to go, you're probably not going to go, oh, I better buy these before so I can keep some other jerk from going. Anyway, now I've talked far too much about the semantics of how to present a live show ticket offer. So just, if you would like to go, it would be nice to have you there. If not, totally cool. But we'll see you there if you do come, and they will be very, very fun. I'm very excited about these shows and this Comic-Con. So I'd like to thank Stamps.com for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Turn your computer into your own personal post office that does not shout at you or that you don't have to wait in line for. If you want to create the post office experience, just get a line of your friends to stand in front of your computer and then just wait there for a while, and then just have your computer just... on a loop, just shout expletives at you. But if you don't want to do all that, then just sit down and print out the exact postage you need for whatever letter or package or whatever you need, and then just hand it to your mail carrier, and then you'll be done. We, of course, have this continuing offer with Stamps.com. The promo code Nerdist will give you a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale, which, by the way, calculates the exact postage for letters and packages, and up to $55 of free postage. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist. That's Stamps.com, and enter the promo code Nerdist. This podcast is Alexis Ohanian, who is a co-founder of Reddit. And I spent a lot of time on Reddit, and I was very excited to meet Alexis, and it turned out to be such a great guy that we actually became pals, and actually I believe may have developed an idea that might be fun for you to jump on. But yeah, he was in town a few weeks back, and he came out to the At Midnight Studios, and we got to hang out a bit. We exchanged numbers. Oh, bro time. And he does have a book, by the way, called Without Their Permission, which came out late last year. It's available anywhere books are sold, digitally or in real life. So check it out. He's an incredibly, incredibly smart guy. He's way smarter than I am, which is totally fine. It was an honor to talk to him and try to feel like I was smarter. So here we go, the Nerdist Podcast number 546 with Alexis Ohanian. Our begin podcast.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Should I make my cat look really fat, or like she sometimes it's all about how she spreads out. Like sometimes she will just be like, here's a reasonable photo. She loves sticking out her tongue like that, and I melt. Well, okay, then.
Are you guys using just wait. The app where you make people look like cats?
No, okay, that's the full Monty. She's sea otters. This is what I call this, and it's the most amazing thing ever.
Did you ever think about putting a stick on it and just like
sweeping the floor?
Yeah. Oh. We like should a Swiffer, like a cat Swiffer.
Our cat should hang out. I miss her.
Where is she now?
Oh, she's back in Brooklyn, but I've only been gone a few days. I'm just pathetic.
No, that's
pathetic.
That's sweet.
I did a 5-month bus tour for my book, and when I came back, I really worried. I thought it was going to be like, you know, those amazing viral videos where the vet comes home and the dog flips out.
Yeah,
and it's like so, and you're all like weepy and stuff. They don't have a lot of those with cats, you know? And so, like, I'm like, karma, I'm home.
Cats are emotionally vacant.
But no, she came to the door and expressed about as much love as I can get out of a cat. I was happy with it, but it wasn't like, I was really expecting, like, the dog jumping up on me, licking the face. But
it just the cat just goes, meow, and then just one balloon just sadly drops.
Look, we threw a party for you.
And just bounces. All right, I'm going to go shit in a box now.
See, this is, and then make you clean it up.
They make you clean it up.
That's the gift. It's like my 16th birthday all over again.
I feel like I feel like having a cat is a very codependent relationship because you're constantly just like, love me more. Mm. Cat, what if I do this? Will you love me more?
Never works. It doesn't. But see, I feel like we were talking about this earlier. I feel like I'm more of a dog person. I just don't. I can't. With living in Brooklyn and traveling and stuff, like, I would just feel terrible having one. And Cat, I'm not, I don't know if she's listening, but I still love her.
She'll listen.
I kind of wish she were a dog.
She'll you know, a dog would be like, you sounded great on that podcast. Cat might listen, but never tell you. And you'd be like, did you listen to podcasts? I don't know. I don't know. To a lot of things.
Got a lot of stuff going on in my life.
I always feel like having a cat is like having a roommate that you slept with once but shouldn't have, and it's just always awkward. Where they just walk across the hall and you're like, oh, am I supposed to go to you, or are we friends still, or do you come to me?
Wow, I have never had that roommate set up, and it makes a lot of sense.
I've never have either, but I'm assuming that's what would happen. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks. This started.
Yeah.
Oh.
It started.
How about that?
It started a little while ago.
Did you like scalp Chewbacca?
I did. Is that an iPad case? This is our guest book.
Oh.
This is our guest book. So when we're done.
Nice.
You will sign this book.
That just roared. Yeah, Wookie roared.
And then we will, when the book is full, we auction it off for charity.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
We've got a little ways to go, but I think we'll get there by the end of the year.
Nice.
Do you spend a lot of time on the West Coast, or is this just for the book tour?
I'm very biased. I love the East Side, but I do, you know, obviously a lot in technology, startups, and investing. So I spend a lot of time in San Francisco. No offense, Southern California. But my grandfather lives here. And a lot of things came into place. I was on the West Coast for Y Combinator and their latest batch, whole new round of startups, new Reddits, new Hipmunks, even better and bigger. And my grandpa's 92 years young. And I was like, Gramps, like, I got to come visit, and I got to get you to do an AMA. And my grandpa, bless his heart, he actually uses the internet a good bit, does not use Reddit. He is aware of Reddit. I mean, I've been working on it for the last 9 years, so like, I'd hope so. And he's very, very supportive of it, but has no idea what it is. But I explained the whole AMA procedure to him, and he was like, all right, let's do this. And I was his typist, as he dictated to me. And we did an amazing AMA a couple days ago, which you should all check out. And it's really cool. And I got inspired because I've started to see more, like, I'm a 94-year-old World War II vet. Ask me anything. These AMAs of people who have lived through so much, who may not necessarily be famous, but who are part of a limited group of people who have this kind of experience. It's really fascinating. I mean, Reddit's median age is like 26.
But someone who's lived to the age of 94, it's a very strong likelihood that they have a lot of great stories to tell just because they've been on this earth a long time. Yeah. So they may not be pop culture famous, but they're sort of humanity famous in a way because they have achieved. I mean, if you make it to that age,
you're doing something right.
You're doing there's something going on for the most part, and there are lessons to be learned, and there are parallels to be drawn. And so, you know, the great thing about Reddit or social media or having this connection to people is that a lot of these people in their 90s would have just otherwise have just been dust in the wind at some point without having their story to tell. But having this, because it's not like most of these cases, people aren't being visited every day so they can spin yarns.
Yeah.
So to be able to reach out to, you know, ostensibly millions of people and say, what do you want to know? I got stories.
And I like, this was absolutely an unintended consequence. Steve and I started Reddit just to have like one front page of interesting links that would one day hopefully grow into many, many communities. There are like, there are 500,000 subreddits now. And I also was watching you last night. Oh, that's creepy. It's LA, so I guess you hear that a lot.
On the show, right?
Not yeah, the, well, okay. I've said too much. And to see, was it combined GIFs, mm-hmm. the subreddit getting a shout out there. Like there are 500,000 communities now on Reddit. Right, we built that platform with just one and hoped that, okay, we could spin up some others and, you know, anyone could create one. And one day, maybe, there'd be like 20. And what's so cool is, you know, the AMA thing spun out because a Redditor or Redditors on r/AskReddit were getting tired of seeing people come on to AskReddit, which is normally a place to ask questions, saying, hey, ask me anything. I'm a, you know, New York subway conductor. And they were like, you know what? This doesn't belong here. Create your own subreddit. And the AMA, all that nomenclature was created by users, like the hashtag. Like we didn't, Steve and I didn't invent that.
Right.
It happened organically. And the best AMAs, I'll tell you, my grandpa does not have a lot of Twitter followers. Does not. He has actually zero. If he went on Twitter and said, I have some amazing stories to tell, odds are no one would ask him a question.
No, because of the nature of
on
the...
Facebook, no one would ask.
Yeah.
What's cool is the best AMAs, I say with all due respect to present company, the best AMAs come from people who are just like, I'm a New York subway conductor, or I am like a trauma nurse who's been doing this for 30 years. Like they are just normal people who don't have any kind of celebrity, not even like internet celebrity. They're just people with great stories. And I like that because it's the nature of the internet. There are people all over who have had great stories, who would have been great interview subjects. Larry King obviously can't take the time to interview all of them.
Right.
But we have the technology now to allow people to just ask these questions of anyone who wants to get up and talk. And it's very cool.
I do. I love the Reddit community. I've been a part of it for a few years. Mm-hmm. I had been
good at it.
I'm okay at it. Yeah. I still feel like I get sucked into things that I shouldn't get sucked into. I'm getting a lot better about that. Mm-hmm. But I've been aware of Reddit for more than 3 years. But it was, my girlfriend Chloe had really like she was a big Redditor and she was like, you know, she's on it constantly.
She has great taste.
I got sucked in, and so she had me do an AMA almost 3 years ago, and it was great.
That was because of her?
It was because of her.
Can I send her like a swag bag or some nice little thank you for that?
Sure, I'm sure she would appreciate that. We'll sort that out.
All right, spoiler. Sorry. you're going to get that. That's really awesome.
Yeah, and damn. You know, and a bunch of my other friends of Redditors, Will Wheaton, and you know, like people who,
oh, yes.
who
I really modeled my beard after him.
Oh no, that is a very
it's a Wheaton-esque beard.
I would have said Wheatonian.
Wheatonian, ah, touche.
But I do feel that you know, at midnight and this may you know, I'm not trying to offend any Redditors by saying this, but I feel like spiritually, it's Reddit, like it's kind of like Reddit the show in the sense that we're sort of finding things that are kind of popping up on the surface of a lot of different communities and then we're commenting on it. And most people are very nice about it, but the kind of snipes that I get on Reddit sometime, like, what are you going to rip off Reddit now? And it's like, well, we're not ripping it off. That's like saying, you know, Jon Stewart's ripping off politics. It's like, this is just the source material.
Yeah.
And then we're adding commentary the way you would as a commenter on a Reddit thread.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just showing stuff and going, look what we found. All right, here's another thing we found. Yeah. Like, it's with any kind of, you know, satire show, it's like, this is the source material. And then we add our comments to it. Like, we add our commentary and see what builds from there. And that, to me, it's sort of the soul of Reddit. It's like, what are people going to do with this, and how is it going to evolve, and where are they going to go, and how's this thread going to turn into a weird, slightly related meme, and then just go into something else completely because everyone's one-upping each
piling
other
on
with jokes.
Yeah, and actually, similar to Reddit, you guys also have a point system that is utterly meaningless. I was like, you are very generous with your points.
I am, but you
very
know,
very generous.
But what happens is that. I do give it a lot of points on the show, but you know, we take basically what's a 35 to 38 minute show and edit it to 21 minutes. And so more often than not, we're going to keep the best stuff.
Right.
So stuff that maybe doesn't get points, it was probably didn't get points for a reason. And so we don't keep it on the, you know, like we don't want to sacrifice good comedy to show a, you know, like something that didn't fly. We do sometimes.
Or, well, yeah, I see what you mean. Because there are probably instances where someone should not get points because it's bad, but somehow it becomes so funny that it's worth keeping
There's kind of a weird... I don't really have a hard and fast rule about it. It's just that if... In very few cases, I will not award points, even if the audience laughs, if it's something... Like, someone took a shot at Harry Potter, and I was like, fuck you, no points.
Wow.
Even though the audience laughed. But in general, if I laugh, it'll get points. If the audience laughs, it'll get points. If it's something that seems relevant in some way, or just felt like, oh, they went a little extra with it, and even though it may not have been hilarious,
yeah.
I'm going to give them points for the effort.
Mm-hmm.
So, it, you know, because I feel, and, you know, one thing that I liked about Reddit from early on is that it in most cases it feels inclusive. Now there are, and that's how I like to conduct things. I like I like everyone to feel included, as opposed to like, no, fuck you, Ed, I'm, you know, this is our thing. Fuck you, that's your thing. I do find sometimes, you know, on Reddit that it can be a little exclusive in certain areas, but that's just, you know. That's just the nature of nerds congregating.
I mean, it's crazy, right? There's about 110 million people every month visiting Reddit, which is mind blowing to me, right? Like, I live in New York, and there's 8 million people there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of New York cities. And so with 500,000 communities, it really runs the gamut. I mean, you know, I think once anything reaches a certain scale, whether it's YouTube comments, whether it's, I mean, Twitter comments, at a certain scale, you're going to get just, you know, assholes.
Yeah.
I think what hopefully shines more often than not, and I know at least just based on, you know, the sort of stuff that Reddit deals with today, the vast majority of content posted there ends up being pretty benign or pretty positive. But this is the nature of a new world where, like, for better or for worse, anyone with a smartphone or a computer can talk. And I love, I mean, I think things like, whose show is it with celebrities reading mean tweets?
Sid Kimmel.
Like brilliantly done. And I think a way to hopefully, I don't know, to hopefully prepare people for the fact that, like, yeah, you have this power, but with it, like Uncle Ben said, comes great responsibility. Mm-hmm. And, like, I totally agree. I think there's so many more opportunities now than ever for us to communicate and share an idea. I hope more often than not we choose to exercise that for good. At the end of the day, I wish I could control people, but I cannot.
I mean, obviously, you know, I think dissenting opinions are good. I just find sometimes the people that can be most frustrating are just flat out rude, and then when you challenge them, they're like, you can't handle the truth. I'm like, no, you're just a dick. if you said it positively and constructively, but, you know, but that's the idea of, like, well, anyone can say whatever they want, and that's just the melting pot of, you know, that's how some people communicate. But I also find that it's like the smaller subreddits, there's a little more social policing with that stuff because people feel a little more accountable. With the large ones, like, yes, our videos, our pics are funny, you know,
yeah,
like it gets that's where you see more of the deluge of that, because it's just the numbers are greater.
It looks like YouTube comments. It looks like all those. Yeah. And it sucks. I think this is something I've thought about a lot, because it's clear, you know, even with, you know, Facebook's obviously made a huge push for Real ID, for your photo, for your real name. It's the only way you use the site. But it's clear that even having your real name and your photo and, like, your mother reading your Facebook posts, people will still be awful.
They will. But I do honestly believe that a percentage of people would be less awful if they felt that they were accountable for their... I mean, for me, look, it's fine. Post anonymously, that's totally cool. But for me personally, I never do. I like being responsible for myself. I mean, I like being accountable for what I say, because I feel like it kind of keeps me in check. And I think that's good for our culture to be accountable for what you say. I think it's good to learn to be accountable for what you say, because ultimately, it just makes you more compassionate and empathetic to people.
Totally agree. I will say, though, one can be accountable for a pseudonym, right? There is a difference between totally anonymous posting,
yes,
and pseudonymous posting,
yes,
right? Like Fluffy Bunny 26, or I'm nothing on Reddit, KN0 thing,
right?
Or, you know, a lot of people on Twitter are under pseudonyms. Allows people to be accountable to a username, but still be a little liberated. I mean, the things I see all the time, you know, you see a subreddit like
Rainbow, which is just rainbow with the slash in the middle. Mm-hmm. You see these stories of people who are able to have discussions pseudonymously that they could never have about their sexuality on Facebook.
Totally agree.
Because of their community.
I completely agree.
And it's a gift and a curse, right? I guess
it's just when you're using it as a weapon.
Right. It's awful.
It's awful. But yes. if you're using it to get in touch with yourself,
yeah,
and like in terms of our rainbow, that's such a powerful tool that, you know, that a lot of those people just wouldn't have had 10 years ago. And then how do they feel accepted and normal?
Yeah. And so it's, like I said, it's like all these things, these communication platforms are all tools. And I do think the more accountability, the better. And it's like, I am the eternal optimist, and I see so many of these things happening all the time, not just on Reddit, but all over the internet, that give me so much hope for, you know, and even one of the OGs, right? Tim Berners-Lee did an amazing AMA talking about what he had in mind for the World Wide Web. And the vision he had and all of his brilliance all those years ago is starting to bear fruit because of social media and because we are, like, someone is empowered now. Every one of us has a printing press or a television station or whatever you want to use for the metaphor. And they're able to have a voice where they traditionally would have been voiceless, and they're able to express themselves and be creative and show off an amazing piece of My Little Warhammer fan art, which is another amazing subreddit that they wouldn't have before, and connect with other fans of My Little Warhammer. Like, that's cool and amazing. And above all, I would love for everyone to treat the internet and their use of it just like they would themselves in real life. They would behave with just as much responsibility as they would in real life. And like I said, ultimately I can't control people. But I see so many examples of the good that I know, look, there's a good and a bad, and I still feel like the good will win because there is more of it.
I like to think that too. I really do like to think that. I think part of the interesting dichotomy of how people interact on the internet and communities is that, the spiritually you're interacting with other humans,
mm-hmm.
but practically you're interfacing with a cold, sterile machine and text.
Yeah.
And so you are connecting with people on some level, but it would be really great if the communal, if the digital highways, if there was just a way to make it a little more human so that people do remember, like, you are communicating with other humans, you know, as opposed to, you know, what just feels like, oh, this is it. I mean, there's a whole generation of people that just, you know, don't really take a lot of it seriously because they know, like, oh, it's just the internet, you know? And then there's me, who very much remembers before internet.
Me too.
And so it was a learning curve to not take things so personally, mm-hmm. because, you know, text, like, someone can just fire off text in an emotional moment, and then a minute later they'll be like, wait, what'd I say now? Like, they just don't even.
Yeah.
But you, like, it's a snapshot of how they were feeling in a moment. But you could take that as, oh, this is a universal truth that they're trying to lay out, and I take it very personally. And why would they, you know, as opposed to just like, it's the internet.
Well, and now celebrity. I mean, like, you're a real capital C celebrity. Celebrity is now also being distributed, right? There are Vine stars with 5 million followers who are in their teens. Like,
absolutely.
They didn't have to get signed. They didn't have to go through a production. Like, they are just now celebrities. I mean, let's say lowercase, we can dispute it, but, like, they have a following. People are paying them lots of money to endorse stuff. There's no blueprint for this. And I wonder. And I, you know, I got my dial up. My 33.6 in middle school changed my life. But I remember, like, I remember that transition. And I, you know, I grew up on message boards and forums. That's how I learned how to code and build websites. And I would trick nonprofits because they didn't know I was just like a pubescent teenager in my parents' house. And I would build websites for them for free just because I wanted the experience and, like, for the pride. But they didn't know I was a teenager, right? And that was the gift of hiding behind an email address. I never had to meet them and say, hey, let me build you a website. You know, I was able to just type. And they judged me based on my work. It's going to be really, really interesting. And like I said, I am forever the optimist. But I just, I look out and I see so many more people now who have access, right? It used to be such a limited number of people who had access to knowledge and a stage. I use the library stage metaphor all the time for the internet, right? So many people wanted access to the best education in the world but couldn't get it because of, well, all the reasons, money, selection, all that stuff. Knowledge is now being widely distributed. If you want to be an expert at knitting or Python or soft scrambling eggs, like, yeah, those tutorials are there. And you can make a better one. If that recipe is good but not great, great. Improve it. Make it better. And knowledge is becoming a sort of almost trivial thing to access for people with internet connection. And then the stage to show it off. You know, the distribution required lots of capital and lots of access before to get an idea, right? You needed to have the printing facility or the television station or the radio station, and now it's anyone. And I look at all the things we've gotten, all the things that we love that make our lives better in culture and technology, and you remember that, like, only a small percentage of the world's population could actually really contribute their genius to that progress. Like, so many people were cut out because, yep, of all kinds of bullshit societal other reasons. And the internet's not like a magic wand, but without a doubt, we're seeing more and more people now getting access. And I think we're now going to benefit from the best ideas from so many more people. Yes. Whether it's in business or nonprofits or, like, what's a niche? Like esports is a really niche thing. But, like, that whole thing didn't even exist, and people are making careers out of not only playing video games but talking about them.
Well, the most obvious example of that is the entertainment business, where, mm-hmm, there used to basically just essentially be four people who, mm-hmm, would decide, you know, four people in television, mm-hmm, like four people in music.
Yeah.
Four people in film.
And all old white dudes.
Who would, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who would, all old white dudes named Lou.
Yeah.
who would decide, mm-hmm, you. Okay, that's it. There's no, yeah, more. And
go
then
home.
Basically, those were the choices that we had. And now, you know, that model is completely flipped. I mean, I talk about this, I talk about this a lot with people where, you know, I try to say, like, do you really grasp the power of Reddit or YouTube or Twitter? Like, I know that we all kind of go, yeah, you know, people can post whatever they want, but I go, but do you really stop and understand, mm-hmm, that you could, in a moment, with no boundaries anymore, completely change the world with an idea or a, you know, something that's socially relevant or something comedic or something dramatic, or, like, just in an instant. And that was never possible in the history of mankind, except for just this last little chunk of humanity. And that, to me, is so incredibly powerful. And, of course, the ironic comedy part is, you know, when I talk about that, I always go, it's funny when you, but then when you look at the comment threads, like, you know,
you can't always expect world changing ideas. You gotta set expectations low.
But ultimately it, you know, the exchange of ideas and power ideas. And, but then also it's very dangerous, very, very dangerous. Like, particularly, you know, because you never know which way the school of fish are going to swim. And, you know, watching what happened with Reddit and the Boston bombing, and people got very, you know, their intentions were very good.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to help find these people. We can help find these,
sure,
people. And then it not really working out exactly the way that they had planned. And then it's like, oh, shit, we have a tremendous amount of power. Now we have a tremendous amount of responsibility. How do we balance these things and make sure that we're using it properly and not just going off half-cocked because we're kind of drunk on this idea of, like, we could change everything?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, that was a really unfortunate situation. And since that happened, you know, Reddit has taken very active measures to basically curb any sorts of these hunts should they bubble up. I mean,
sure,
as best you can, you know, in real time, monitor 500,000 communities with millions,
right,
of people. But and it's actually, it you know, not long after that bombing, there was another unfortunate attack, and the FBI was looking for people, and it was very encouraging to see that, you know, those millions of people who use Reddit had sort of learned their lesson, and it didn't happen again.
Yeah.
You know, the challenge is also that, you know, that was a thread on a particular subreddit that then got validated by journalists who tweeted it. The New York Times did a good breakdown of the whole thing. What is so troubling now is we still haven't figured out, like, so much of the news world is still built, which is such a vital role, is still built around delivering news first, being fastest, right? You would race your trucks down to get the satellite equipment up and report on the story. And they were built to be as fast as possible and beat their competitors in terms of speed. And now we have these tools that allow either a journalist to just hit out a tweet and say, hey, check out this thread. I think Reddit right. figured it out. But also allows any one of us to just be on the scene, right? Being first is no longer – the news organizations will never beat the internet and all of us with smartphones as being first to report on something. There was a dude in Pakistan who live tweeted the bin Laden raid. I mean, that was – he didn't know what he was doing at the time. But like, that's the future we're living in.
Well, yeah. And how many times have you seen something really quickly and then just like tweeted it or retweeted it? And you go, that's I better let people know. And then you realize, like, that was a hoax, or that was dumb, or whoops. And it,
I mean, Jimmy does a great job with this, faking out those prank videos with like the girl on fire. Like, and this is, and I don't have an answer for this because, again, on the one hand, it's great any one of us can sort of contribute to the knowledge, can report on a thing that is happening. On the other hand, like, the way journalism works is that we know, like, this is a trusted source. And yes, journalists have gotten it wrong. They're humans, right?
Of course.
But, like, there is a standard that they're held to. There is, like, an expectation. And we now have a ton of noise. And we have traditional ways of sort of figuring out the signal. But even those people, even those journalists and those organizations are feeling the pressure of, like, gotta be first. Gotta do this.
That's unfortunately – oh, I'm sorry. I mean to cut you off.
No, but I – like – and so I don't have an answer because we need – I mean, this democracies don't work without great press and great journalism. And we don't have – I don't think we've yet figured out how to balance, how to reconcile all of that access to knowledge, all that access to sort of real-time reporting. And that's not journalism, but it's like reporting, like, here's what's happening. Click, photo. With the fact that we need people to tell us, like, this is what's happening. Here's the broader context. Like, this is the truth.
Right.
Instead of just, oh, here's something we saw.
But I can't help but wonder if it has something to do – and I'm not like I don't know. This might make me sound crazy, but I kind of wonder, at least with news, if it has to do with sort of like capitalism. Because ultimately, they are company – like a news organization, they do serve the news – but that's not necessarily their primary directive. Their primary directive is that they're a business that they have to scale and grow, and the news is the engine that drives that. Mm-hmm. And so when that is happening, then the fuel is we have to have quicker stories, bigger stories, and a lot of bigger stories usually involve fear-based stories because that gets people to you know, like, are you more inclined to watch the news and go, you know, hey, 72 and sunny, great day today, and nothing really bad. Or are you more inclined to, like, the grapes in your grocer's refrigerator might kill you? Oh, fuck, I gotta watch. You know, like, I feel like there's so much fear mongering that happens. Not that there aren't horrible things in the world, but I mean, some things, you know, I do feel get sort of skewed in that direction because they have to service these financial infrastructures. And I feel like that's kind of where the audiences and the consumers get fucked a little bit because, you know, each of these organizations has a little bit of bias. They have a little – they kind of have their own agenda and their agenda isn't necessarily to – and I don't know if there is an unbiased way to deliver the news. Because by nature, the fact that
anyone's reporting
it, it's going to be from
their point of view. If a human's reporting it. Yeah, I think what folks like – so what's been interesting?
What? Robots.
Oh, yes. Yeah, robots are always the solution.
Robot news.
Robot news, of course, will eventually one day – enslave
or
us.
The Lambiosaurus news?
You know, the Lambiosaurus is the greatest dinosaur ever, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know. I don't know if it's capable of doing real good journalism.
Okay.
Well, it's going to make me very unpopular.
Very surprised to hear you of all people say
very
that.
Unpopular.
Okay.
the thing I hope we figure out, like Vice in a lot of their reporting have done this kind of like that gonzo journalism where they are like they're giving you everything. The journalist is like, I'm really scared right now. They are in it. Sometimes they're tripping on drugs, but like they are doing some really impressive journalism in places where I feel like we don't get a lot of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be one front for like how you could maybe think about it for at least video news. But it's not real time. And I think what more and more people who spend more and more time online are realizing is that what we're looking for is not objectivity, but it's transparency. It's this acknowledgement that like anyone reporting on anything, even when it was like Cronkite or Murrow, like they had an agenda, they had a perspective, and yes, they did. They were amazing journalists and amazing reporters, but they weren't objective. I mean, they were people.
Sure.
And I think it's more of a concession that like the new face of it is going to be, you know, a little bit more, I don't know, there's more of a concession that like, you know what, this is how we're seeing the world. This is the perspective. We acknowledge we can't totally give you unbiased news unless it's like a very, very fact-based sort of headline-driven thing. And so it's about acknowledging those biases. But I don't know if there is, I don't know if there is a business model. So I'm through Y Combinator and then also as an investor, there's a startup, full disclosure, that I invested in called Beacon, which is doing sort of like a Patreon style model of a subscription model for journalism. So if you pay $5 a month, you get access to the entire network of Beacon journalists. But you can also specifically target for journalists writing on certain beats. So they had some, I think it was a couple women who were fundraising for reporting on the prison system, which is horribly screwed up in this country. The prison industrial complex is ridiculous. And their thinking is, people are going to want to put money towards investigative journalism. Is the hardest to fund because it's ongoing. You can't do a Kickstarter campaign for investigative journalism. It's also sort of the least sexy because it's going to take a month to do a ton of research, but what you get out of it could be world changing. But it's so vital. And ostensibly, we all believe, like, yes, should we have journalists who are investigating our government or our businesses or whatever? And the answer is yes. And so the thinking goes, well, if it can be a subscription model, people will feel – I mean, ask my dad why he still subscribes to the Baltimore Sun. And I'm like, Dad, I love you, but like, really? And he's like, because I believe in this institution and the people who work there to do the journalism they're doing. And I'm like, you don't even read – you read one article online every day. Why are you subscribing to the paper? And it's like, it's the principle of it. I want to know that it exists and it is there. And so I took that apart from the fact that he gets dead trees sent to him every day. And I'm like, well, the dead tree part isn't that important. It's that he's funding journalism that makes him feel like it's making Baltimore and the surrounding area a better place to live. And so that's why the Beacon model appealed to me. And I hope we can figure that part of it out, because you're not going to get good journalism without funding. I mean, there's the nonprofit route, like The Guardian, right? If you find enough money, if you can get a trust, you can have nonprofit journalism. But the business model is always going to be there unless we find a way that's not based on advertising, not based on the headlines and getting page views.
Yeah.
But I don't have a good answer for that. I mean, I don't know if this is something Nerdist wants to tackle. This is the fate of our free democracy here at stake.
Well, so. And that's interesting is that there is that sort of there is that sort of like micro-capitalist structure of the currency of points and karma and attention and, you know, and also individuals. It's first, you know, it's firsties.
Oh, man.
It's
worst
firsties.
Comment ever.
It's firsties culture.
Whoever does that, stop. Just stop.
And you usually don't quite get it.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
It's usually like the third
it's
one.
The third one.
God damn it. But ultimately, it is because we crave attention, we crave validation, and, you know, especially with the internet, you know, knowledge, information is the currency, and so that is how people establish significance, you know? Mm-hmm. And certainly, I think, I mean, I get in this argument all the time where people, when people say to me, like, you're not a nerd, you know? And I go, you know...
Why do they say that?
I don't know, because they think I don't...
Because of your rugged good looks?
It's my rugged good looks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think just because I look like Seacrest, and so I think they just sort of go, you know, you can't be that, or, you know. And I was not a comic book guy growing up. I was a tech guy and a sci-fi guy and a video game guy growing up, and so I don't know why. I think they just don't. Whatever it is, you know, maybe they're right, maybe they're not. I don't know. But I feel like it's not about the superficial things that people consume. I feel like it doesn't matter if you read comic books or, you know, like how deep the trench goes for your sci-fi viewing or how many Ray Bradbury books you've read. I think it's a way that we process information. Mm-hmm. And I think the way that nerds and ultimately the soul of the internet processes information is, I'm going to understand this thing more than any other living creature, and then I'm going to use that information against you.
Oh,
and you know,
man.
It's like,
yeah.
it's the knowledge is power.
Yeah.
But not, like, power with a capital P, and power, the word power is throbbing, you know? Like, it's that kind of thing. And so
that's not a good look.
We use that, you know, like, we use that. It's very empowering to be the person who delivers bad news or tells someone else that their thing is wrong or goes, you know, you're dumb and here's why. Like, there is that there is that sort of drunkenness on that kind of power that I think, you know, we all have now as being a part of this, you know, mega community of internet culture.
Can I use your platform for something?
Please.
Just a little try. All right, how about this? What if, I don't know if you've ever dared your listeners, what if everyone right now listening to this goes and leaves a positive or uplifting comment somewhere on the internet on a stranger? Not, you can't just go to your, like, mom's Facebook page and be like, I love you, mom, you're great.
No,
you should do that
somewhere.
Anyway. You should do that anyway.
Yeah.
But everyone pays it forward.
Yeah.
We I know you're not supposed to create a hashtag. What would we need a good hashtag for this. I guess you tweet your hashtag ideas at us, but,
Pay it forward slash? No, I don't know. Say good shit.
Yeah, hashtag good karma, hashtag.
You know, Will Wheaton's got the perfect don't be a dick.
But yes, he does.
Although, but don't be a dick doesn't necessarily mean going out and doing something good.
Right. This is that's more like just don't be a jerk. This is go.
This is very proactive.
Leave a positive comment on some stranger's, whatever social media you want to use.
Yeah.
Just
say something nice. Say something nice. Because ultimately, I do believe.
It feels really good.
I do believe that in most cases, you know, you could look at anything, any object, any event, anything. Not, I mean, obviously there are exceptions, but in most cases you can look at things and you can write down five positive things about it and five negative things. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's more challenging a lot of times to find the positivity in things because in general, we're scared, insecure. We feel bad about ourselves. We expect defeat, you know, keep the bar low, you know?
And let me go further. I think we talked earlier about how media in all of its forms were, you know, controlled by a few people. And I'm talking about media like music and film, but even press media. You had limited access to disseminating ideas. And the people who could disseminate ideas, I could throw governments in there too. Governments, large businesses, advertisers, all those people. It was in their best interest to make us afraid of one another. It was in their best interest if they were trying to sell us deodorant to make us think if we didn't buy their deodorant, no one would go out with us.
Right.
Or if we didn't elect them, something awful would happen.
Right.
Or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It has always been in people with power's best interest to make everyone else feel worried about one another or skeptical of one another. So when you're sitting on the subway with them, you're worrying about that thing. You're worried about the deodorant you're wearing, or you're worried about just what they might do to you or whatever. What I hope comes out of the fact that like we've essentially democratized this ability to communicate is that we can start to dispel some of this. Because I really do think most people are reasonable people. And reasonable people never got platform. No one wrote the headline news of like, father of four goes home and spends time with his family.
Exactly.
Like that stuff never spread, that never showed. And now even a subtle, you know, even a subtle Instagram photo that goes viral of a couple of dads brushing their teeth with their kids makes people think like, huh, that's a normal thing that happens in the world. And for some people, that starts to chip away at a perception of how they sort of have believed the world is. And I know I'm pretty optimistic about this stuff, just I guess by my nature. But I do think there are ways to turn the tide on this because it is not exclusive to Reddit. It is all over the internet. I see people doing things for total strangers that I didn't think would have been possible. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't think someone would want to gift someone a pizza just because they had a bad day.
Yeah.
But I also wouldn't think that, like, you know, a bunch of people could start a Twitter hashtag campaign to fundraise to help a little girl get a prosthetic arm that they didn't know. Like, right. They didn't need – someone just had an idea, and it spun out. And I think people have always craved this. We want to feel like we're part of a community, whether we go to religious groups or whether we find community in whatever it is. But, like, the internet is a chance for us to see that, like, there's a much bigger world out there that actually is full of other people who are just as insecure and normal and weird and like, you know, Warhammer My Little Pony like we do. And I hope – I mean, I'm not getting all kumbaya. There's obviously lots of shit going on in the world. But, like – I really hope that's what comes out of this, and it's going to be because of this Nerdist campaign we just started here today.
Well, I think it's number one. I agree, but number two, I really think that there's a fundamental thing about humanity, and maybe for some people it's spiritual, but in other cases, I think it might actually just be fundamentally biological about the way that we evolved. But I think you really do. There is something you feel your molecules align when you feel like you're contributing to something that's bigger than you are.
Yes.
And, you know, for some people that is religion, for some people that can be politics, for some people that can be charity, for some people it can just be giving a pizza to a guy who had a bad day.
Exactly.
But ultimately, you know, because of the way that, again, that we interface with these machines, we have allowed ourselves to become these isolated bubbles of – And so much technology, so many algorithms basically help us create this selfish bubble.
Yes, filter bubble. Yeah.
You know, there's this song by Yes, the band Yes, and one of the lines is don't surround yourself with yourself, and like that's all we do.
Yeah.
I sound like a fucking hippie, but ultimately that's all we do is we surround ourselves with ourselves.
Yeah,
and so it. You know, these are all the things I like, and this is me, and this is, we get very myopic, and then everything's right here, and it's all, everything must be about me. And you know, it's important to force yourself to step out of that sometimes and go, no, it's fucking not. It's about that guy and those people and that kid and that guy and his pizza. And so this is, you know, it is very important. And we do focus on the shit a lot, much in the same way that I don't dislike kids, but I do know that I don't have any kids, but I do know that my perception of kids is what I see in airports and on planes, which I am in a lot. Okay. I'm only going to notice the ones who are being dicks.
Truth.
I don't notice, just like the guy going home to the family of four, I don't notice the good kids because they just blend into the background.
Yeah.
But there's probably a lot more of them than the loud squeaky wheels, much like the trolls or much like people who are like, you know, fuck you,
this is a well-studied psychological bias that I'm totally blanking on right now, but I took a cog sci class in college and it's all flooding back to me. It's the same fallacy why whenever people remark how they always forget their umbrella on the days that it rains, it's like, no, because it was just a non-event the days when it wasn't raining or the days that it was raining and you had your umbrella. You were just like, doo-doo-doo, umbrella, great, life's great. But it's those moments that stand out. Like you said, the kids screaming on the plane. And I hope – I mean, it's tough, right? Humans, we're smart at a lot of stuff. We're also really stupid with a lot of stuff and how we sort of process and understand the world and evaluate things like risk and all this stuff. But I really want to believe that this stuff can win, that the good stuff can win, because there's so many of us. And now for the first time, we all have an ability. We all have a platform.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think it all starts here, frankly. And this is going to – history will look back on this podcast and realize this was a seminal moment.
The problem is we're missing a really snazzy name for it.
And a mascot.
And a mascot.
I mean, you're talking Reddit Hitmonk. Like, everything I do, Brad Pig, I draw mascots for them.
You got an alien, you got the Hitmonk. Like, you need, like, we need something. We need something.
I think someone from Team Nerdist, someone in the Nerdist community is going to come up with some ideas.
I feel like it should be me. I feel a lot of responsibility that it should be me.
Yeah.
So the idea being that you go on once a day, or you just go on right now?
Ooh, let's do that once. No, let's make it consistent. I mean, once a day, once a week, once a day. I'm just not asking too much, right?
It's not that, you know, like some, I think that the potential problem with that is that some people could, you know, like, you know, people don't tend to look at things. They don't really compartmentalize things a day at a time. So sometimes people go, I got to do this 365 times. So well, technically you do. Yeah. But don't
think of it like
don't
that.
Don't take it all on it. You know, don't take the 365 minutes all on at once.
Wait, maybe we should. Oh, I know what we can do. You know, like Throwback Thursday?
Of course.
Obviously. let me tell you about how the internet works.
Your Throwback Thursday reference was actually a throwback.
Oh, nice.
And today is Thursday.
I wish that was so meta. Is that what? I don't even know what day of the week
it is.
It's great.
Thursday.
Huzzah. Yeah. Okay, so. What if we just need a day where we decide, like, oh, it's nice thing, Nurs Day. No, that doesn't
there's work. No Nurs Day.
We need an alliteration here or something.
How about
can workshop this. But I like – and I'll go even a step further. So my buddy Eli, who's the founder of Upworthy, wrote the book Filter Bubble, which was a lot of the stuff you're talking about. We – as humans, like, we joined bowling leagues, you know, pre-internet, I guess people bowled, like with people who we got on with were probably kind of similar to us. And our Twitter follower – the subreddits we subscribe to, the Twitter people we follow, probably things we're into, the Facebook feeds we like. And one of his best suggestions for dealing with this, that, I mean, it's not the most like creative, but it's actually the only one I've found that works, is just following people who you just wouldn't otherwise follow. So every couple of days on Instagram or Twitter, I'll just randomly follow some people, and I'm subscribed to subreddits like R Black Ladies, which I am, just to be clear for anyone listening, I'm not a black lady.
No.
But by dipping into these communities and these feeds, and I mean, like I'll every now and then see a tweet from Karl Rove and I'm like, why the fuck am I? Oh, right. But it's like, okay, I guess, you know, I have decided to open up a bit, and it gives me sort of a broader sense of how the world is looking.
Which is smart because again, when you surround yourself with stuff that's just your own bubble, you're essentially going to spend the rest of your life just trying to feed things that you already believe, even if those things might evolve or change or might not even be true.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, I think that's why you see a lot of people, like a lot of older people, you're like, did they go crazy?
Yes,
did they go fucking crazy? Just like, no, because they went down a path and they started piece by piece just sort of building this kind of weird hive around themselves.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden at a certain point, they just don't have the energy anymore to look outside that bubble.
Dude, that is the thing that terrifies me about getting old. I hope we're going to be different because we have so much access to so many different viewpoints.
I think
it'd be a tragedy if we fuck that up.
I think the idea of old is when you cease to devote energy to experiencing new things.
That's good.
When you have decided, like, I don't have time or energy for these new things, I don't want them anymore, I don't have the emotional energy to expend on it, it's not worth it, then I think that's when you really start to get old, because ultimately, that's, you know, when a flower says, I don't need any more sun or fertilizer, it's like, well, then there's really only one place to go.
Yeah.
So you know, you can be 92 but still experience new things and still not technically be old, even if your body is.
Hopefully I'll be up in the Matrix by then, but
yeah. You're kind of hoping for you're kind of hoping for the transhumanist event horizon.
I'm not betting on the whole Kurzweil singularity thing, but it would, I mean, as far as like futurists go, I'm happy he's on the sort of like optimistic side instead of like, hey, nuclear annihilation or robot enslavement. Like, I'm happy it's that one, but I'm not.
What are some of your favorite subreddits?
Oh man, how do you choose? Oh, so ask R. So I'm a history major, which is very atypical. State school, UVA, Wahoo Wah, history major. That's where I met Steve. He was a CS major. So he's the brains, the operation. I ask historians is one of my favorites because it makes me smarter, or at least I feel like it. And you know, that if I go a little deeper in that, then obviously you got to give love to Ask Science. But then there's just random stuff like R Mildly Interesting.
Yes,
that one's come up a lot between me and my friends and like the email list every now and then. Our Woe Dude is great, especially when I'm here in California, because it is such a progressive state regarding their marijuana laws.
Our
Space Porned.
Yes.
That's a great one. It's a safe for work porn site. Let me be very clear. People sharing photos of space. Beautiful high-res stuff. Great desktop wallpaper. I don't know. I should look.
I like misleading thumbnails.
Ooh. Do you play 50-50?
You know, Chloe plays 50-50 a lot. I'm just too...
I don't have the...
I'm too afraid of the dark 50.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really... I enjoy the wins, but I take the losses too hard.
Yep.
Yeah. No, me too. So that one's real tough for me emotionally.
Can't deal with that one.
I love our obscure media. I think that's maybe one of my favorites. Obscure media basically just directs you to, you know... Here's a weird Alf commercial from 1984, and it or like, you know, here's the Spider-Man TV movie from mid-70s, or here's a super trippy KFC ad from 1963. Like, it's just I've just explained to the audience what obscure media is, but it is literally obscure media. What's the one, Jayla? Dinosaurs fucking trucks?
Yes.
Dragons fucking trucks.
Man,
those are good. Old School Cool is great. If you haven't seen that one,
You were schooling me about. Just there's half a million of these. Okay,
great old pictures of like,
Like, here's my grandpa who's a boss.
Yes.
Okay.
Or, you know, here's some kids playing on a fire hydrant in Brooklyn in 1954, everyone just looks fucking
so cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's a good one.
I like those.
I'm gonna have to subscribe.
Yeah.
Obviously as a cat owner, r/cats is good. I've actually gone there for cat advice, just because, you know, I was a little worried about we talked earlier about my cat's weight. I was teaching her how to sit. I was really proud of this, but every time I would sort of encourage her with a treat and then I bring her to the vet's like, she's fat. Way to go. And I can't even blame it. I can't be like, yeah, I shouldn't have left the Snickers in the house, because like, she's a cat. Like, I am fully responsible for feeding her, and I screwed up.
What's one of the things that it's like? Oh. I interviewed George Lucas one time, and I was sort of fascinated by the idea that he created this thing that no matter what it was to him, it's not his anymore. It belongs to the world.
Yeah,
and he might say things about it, and people go, No. Nope, and he's like, I created the thing. Yeah. They go, no, fuck you. That's not what it is. So there must be stuff like that with Reddit. Mm. So, you know, what are some of the positive things that you've seen, and what are some of the things where you're like, yeah, I don't know. There's this one aspect that I didn't foresee that maybe I could do without.
You know, that's interesting. I can't believe I'm just compared to George Lucas.
Well, you created it. I mean, look, you co-created a thing that is as impactful, actually more impactful because...
Because
the
prequels
change.
Were so bad. Oh, yes. Well, and let's, I mean, keep in mind, right? Like, we built, the way Steve and I always thought about it was like, it's forum software. At the end of the day, we grew up on web forums. We didn't invent the forum. We just built a really good platform for communities to share links and have discussions. We thought of it like, we're going to build the best, like, sort of community printing press that we can, where anyone can take a stab at, you know, using this printing press. I think what, you know, Star Wars, as awesome as it is still just,
you know, it is a bunch of ideas and some content. If you create a platform to create content, you're going to potentially empower. I mean, right? What
teach a man to fish?
You know, yes. And so
and
I mean,
he catches a Gungan.
Nice. No, poor Gungans.
I know.
Oh,
they didn't have a chance.
Not a chance. Oh, I think the thing for me was we had no clue. We never. I mean, our expectations were just let's hopefully make this thing work and get like a few hundred people to use the one community we launched with, and then get a few more people to use the next. Everything on Reddit is people. Like everything on Reddit, like. I didn't like Lucas created an entire canon. Like he set the table with all these things that we've gone and created so much fan fiction and other things for. Like we created a bunch of tools. We basically, you know, if I can stretch this metaphor, like we created the canvas and handed a bunch of brushes or the printing press and handed a bunch of fonts and type and just said, go make stuff. So, I mean, aside from the Reddit alien, like, which I love seeing tattooed on people and whatnot, like we can't take credit for anything. Like it was creating these tools and, I wonder how the Twitter guys feel. I mean, I would never think any of that stuff happens because of Reddit. Because like you hear like my, we were sitting in front of microphones. Like, it would be just as absurd to give Reddit or Twitter credit as it would be to say like, you know, the I Have a Dream speech. That microphone did an amazing job with that speech. Like, what a great microphone. That changed. That set the world on fire.
Right.
And so I feel the same way. And that's not just like, it's not some kind of false humility or even genuine humility. Like, that's just the truth. Like, it was an amazing platform that has done really cool stuff. But at the end of the day, it's a microphone.
It's a microphone that ultimately you've given people. It essentially amplifies humanity.
Yeah, for better or for worse. And I think, obviously, I can't take credit for humanity. I will not take credit.
You sure?
I will not. I
was going to give it to you.
I almost came in here ready to do it, but I was like, no. But that's how I feel. And so I am looking out at this. For the last 9 years, we just had our 9th anniversary, actually, mm-hmm. our 9th birthday. The first submission to Reddit, fun fact, was a link I submitted to the Downing Street memo, which was a more relevant memo back in 2005. And Steve promptly downvoted it. So the first vote ever on Reddit was from my best friend and co-founder, and he downvoted my link. And it was just the two of us in this little apartment, so I knew exactly. I was like, really? Really? Really, Steve? He's a dick.
Sorry, that's man. Just, I'm amplifying humanity. I mean, this is, you know, this is what the people want.
So I think we knew from the start it would never work unless we had users and gave them these great tools. And so the whole way, like Lucas, to his credit, right, actually created. I mean, he borrowed a lot, but and had a lot of help. But he, you know, he created a universe, right? He created all these things. He put a bunch of things on canvas and then said, go, you know, this is no longer mine. The only thing I put on a canvas, or Steve and I put on a canvas, was like the Reddit alien. We just handed out those tools. And I feel so much joy knowing that it could be a part of this and also be open source. So Reddit's entirely open source. You can go download. It's on GitHub. Just download Reddit right now. Roll your own Reddit. Go for it. Because what let Steve and I start a startup, none of the other guys, Zuck, Twitter, these guys never talk about this stuff, and I wish they did.
Not even Zuck.
I know, right? they don't talk about the fact that the reason we could start, Steve and I were two nobodies out of UVA who we raised 12 grand from Y Combinator to live for a summer in Boston, and we built something with our laptops. And, you know, like I said, 12 grand in budget that now has 100 million plus users, all because of open source software. The cost of starting that was so low because a bunch of people had contributed to this knowledge, contributed free knowledge to allow us to build on their platforms. And so, you know, a few years in, it was very clear to both me and Steve, the only thing that wasn't open source about Reddit was Reddit itself. And we knew that the value on Reddit, right, the tools we made were only valuable because of the people using it. And so giving those tools out, not unlike Tesla opening up their patents,
right.
was actually in our long-term best interests.
Make these!
Right? Like, go, please spread these ideas. Because in the end, we think it's just going to enrich everyone. All, you know, the rising tide lifting all boats. And what's crazy is, you know, Tesla is a for-profit, publicly traded, I am a shareholder company.
And everyone's asking me after they do this, like, how altruistic was it? And I'm like, well, why does it have to be mutually exclusive? Why, like, why does it have to be either an altruistic thing or a sinister corporate thing? Like, maybe it's actually in the best interest of a for-profit company to open up this database. And it's valuable because if the world moves to electric cars, Tesla just knows they're going to out-innovate. And they're building the supercharger stations everywhere.
That's the key word, is, so that, like, is that you can't be afraid. If anything, opening up the field forces you to innovate.
To be better, yeah.
And how, you know, so it's really just how comfortable are you with, like, with, and you know, ultimately, if someone out-innovates you, it might suck for you selfishly, but it's better for
better
humanity.
Better for the world. Yeah. Deal with it. I tell people all the fucking time, Bill, take a look at our source, crush Reddit. You know what? And I say that, kind of, I mean, it'll make me sad, but, like, I really do feel that way. And we, like, I think we thrive on this in technology, and it's starting to bleed out into other industries. And I see, like, okay, coming from and being here in LA and hanging with friends who are, like, starting their music careers or film careers, and they're doing it online, right? They're launching their Kickstarters, they're launching their Patreons, they're on YouTube, they're creating content. I see how the rate of innovation for them now is starting to look like the rate of innovation was for us in the early days of, like, 05, 06, because now you're creating something amazing with your GoPro. Did you remember the Superman GoPro video?
Yeah,
that went viral,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you see this now and you're like, whoa, okay. Now 100 other people in filmmakers are like, that was cool. What's the next level? How do we take that thing and do something even more badass with a GoPro? And it just...
It's the ever-growing pyramid. It's just going up and up and up.
And everyone's hustling. I'm sure there are people listening to this who are like, that Chris Hardwick's good, but I can do great.
And I always tell
people... And she's getting started on some great Nerdist empire.
I always tell people when people... Like, if they say to me, like, you know, you do this, or you interrupt people, or you talk too much, or you do this, I always go, fine, you start your own and do it exact. And I don't say that aggressively. I just go, make the thing that you want to see exist in the world. Mm-hmm. Because if you're dissatisfied... That's a good place to be.
Yeah.
But people who achieve greatness do something positive and constructive with that dissatisfaction, and they don't just go, oh, God damn it, and then just write a bunch of shitty comments. Like,
truth.
Your contribution to the world is not writing shitty comments. Your contribution to the world is making like manifesting things that innovate and make the world a more interesting place.
Be a maker, be a doer, be a creator. The TLDR that I gave to these 80 universities on the college tour was have ideas and do them. Like, the internet lets you not just settle for having a great idea, or in the worst case of it, just, like, leaving a shitty comment about how it could be better. But, like, actually be someone who does stuff.
Right.
Be someone who says, like, you know what? I'd really like to start an Etsy empire for knitting, and be like, all right, I'm going to go find a YouTube tutorial and start learning how to knit and join a knitting community. What's that? There's an amazing one on Raffle.
Is it
Ravelry? Oh,
that is one.
Really?
I think so.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think Ravelry is what I was thinking about. Like, more knowledge is available than ever. And yeah, or if you find something that you just don't think is good enough, mate, start. You have no excuse now not to start your own. They literally have no excuse.
And I think this is one of the reasons why, and I know that you care very deeply about this, and I know Reddit, the community of Reddit, cares very deeply about this. This is why net neutrality is so important.
Truth.
Because, again, we can't, much in the way that you were talking before, like in the old days, only certain types of people had access to certain resources and information, and we as a human culture can't really have that happen again.
No,
like
we will go so far back.
Yeah, so we can't have that happen digitally when it's like, you know, when we're so on the forefront now. But you know, I still feel like it's so much a part of like people are just so in it now with the internet that it's. I feel like that people in general, it's just sort of like, oh, you don't want me to pirate this? Well, here's 50 ways I just figured out how to do that. Like, yeah. I feel like the internet will always undertake the challenge to subvert, you know, when necessary.
People are very resourceful, right? We've known that for all history. Even before the internet, people are very resourceful. But the internet itself is a technology. Like, what is it? Gilmore said it interprets censorship as damage and routes around it. People will always find a way. The answer to piracy is service. Gabe Newell of Valve said it best. He's like, piracy is a service problem. And he's such a boss, not only for Half-Life, although I guess we're all waiting for Half-Life 3.
Clues are there, man.
It's all coming together.
They're there.
But like, my favorite anecdote, this dude went into Russia and everyone said,
no, you can't go there, man. It's a whole industry of piracy. You guys are going to fail miserably. Don't do it. Don't do it. And he was like, you know what? I got this. Piracy is a service problem. And they went in there with Steam and offered a service that was better than piracy. And now it's one of their biggest markets now. They went into the lion's den, offered something that was a better service than piracy, and are winning. Like, innovation is what's going to win the day. It's not going to be legislation or trying to just mess with the net. And then when it comes to net neutrality, if I can use the platform, I've been going anytime anyone would give me airtime, I encourage people, just like hopefully you saw John Oliver pleading, go to the FCC's website.
Oh, then he fucking comments, crashed it.
Took down the site. This is a public comment period. We have until September 10th. You can call them. I've called them up. They're very nice people there. Just let them know that Title II reclassification is what we need for broadband. It's going to make broadband the utility we all know it is, so that Comcast and Verizon and I guess there's only really three companies, Cox, can't discriminate traffic on the internet, and that all bits are treated equally because they should be. So please do that.
And I just got to note that you have a hard out. You have to do more booking.
Well, I have a flight.
Oh shit! Yeah, that's a very hard out.
No, it's okay. I think. Well, hold on. Let me double check. What's traffic like in LA?
Oh, there's hardly anyone on the road.
I don't think it'd be
actually between here and the airport. It's not that bad. You're like 20 minutes. Now let's do the Californian sketch. I would recommend taking La Brea all the way to Stalker and then over to Sepulveda and then into the airport and then over to Sepulveda, La Tijera.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, okay. Was that the right way?
We could. If I'm out of here at 1, I should be fine.
You'll be okay.
Great. Or even 1:15.
You'll get to meet Gary Cole on the way out.
Oh, right on.
Who's coming in for the next podcast?
Oh, it's just an assembly line.
Just the two of you today. So I'm trying to think about names for this thing, and I came up with one, but okay. It's real bad because it's a shitty portmanteau.
Bring it.
Ampla Friday.
I kind of like that
because we're talking about humanity amplifiers.
Yeah, I like that. I'm down with that.
Ampla Friday. I don't know though. It's almost. Should it be purposely clunky?
That's a long one.
It's just that's too long. It's too long. Should it be a purposely clunky one?
Or it could just be reduced to like, you know, the TBT once enough people know about it. So this would be faith in humanity. Fifth?
H.
Fifth?
Fifth.
Fifth.
Faith in Fridays. Fifth. Faith in Fridays.
I like this Friday thing.
Because that's, you know, like you start your weekend. You know, is that good? Or do we like it Mondays because Monday people come back in?
Yeah,
you start
the
week.
Case of the Mondays.
You got the case of the Mondays. or should it not have anything to do with anything? And should it just be like Nards Day? And we're like, what's Nards Day? Oh, well, it's just this. Like it's
it's just whatever it is. It has to be amazing. I think it's the only thing we should definitely agree on. Monday.
Mondazing.
Mondays is not bad.
But so the idea is that...
Munderful?
No. Munderful. Oof.
It just fell out of my mouth. I'm sorry.
That's Olivia Munn's fan group. No, it's not. is it something about... So the basic idea is that one day a week you go out of your way to make someone feel better about themselves. You're
something they've created or something that they've done. Yeah.
So is it a karma based pun, which essentially ties it back to to karma?
Mm. Car Monday.
Someone right now is just screaming at their headphones like, "It's right here, you fucking idiots!"
They will tweet at us.
You created Reddit. How could you not think of something right now?
You know, we actually Reddit was almost called so. I registered REDDIT and REDITT at the same time. This was senior year at UVA. I was in the library, Alderman Library, trying to come up with names for our company. And I was really proud of that because I was like, oh, people say I read it on Reddit. And I was going to go with REDITT because I just kind of thought that made more sense. And I asked my friend Melissa, shout out Melissa, which one, like if you were going to bastardize Reddit, like read it, mm-hmm. which one of these bastardizations makes more sense? And she's like, 2 D's. And I was like, all right, done.
Done.
And other names suggested by Paul Graham include Octopop.
Wow. Okay.
I'm shaking my head.
Communist era topless photos.
There were some really, there were some really awful ones too. Oh, Ooblagoo. There were some
Ooblagoo.
Ooblagoo. No. Poplex. That was one. I have all these emails.
Like Popular Lexicon?
Yeah. We thought about Vox Pop for a minute, but I think it was already registered. Like Voice of the People. That was a little too heady. But anyway, I think I'm saying is I'm not great with names. Hipmunk was almost Bounce Pounce, okay? And then Adam's girlfriend was like, just come up with a cute animal and then misspell it so you can get the domain name so then Alexis can draw a mascot. So Chipmunk without the C, and nothing to do with Travel Search, but yeah.
What's your grandfather's name?
John.
Mm.
Yeah. I know. Not a lot to work with. Sorry, Grandpa. I love you.
Let's see.
And he listens every week.
He doesn't.
Yeah, I don't think podcasting is not.
Maybe on this special day of the week, he'll pay it forward.
There we go. Yeah.
I mean,
I actually have faith that your followers and then the 20 people following me are going to come up with something good.
What if we just called it Payday?
Ooh, and then do it on Friday.
You do it on Friday.
Huzzah!
Damn!
Oh. Fuck yes!
Owned it.
You're paying
that was it.
One more.
I felt it.
Forward, and it's Friday. Ooh. Oh, my
Bravo.
God.
Bravo.
My brain's vagina needs to just feels good. Like
just spit out a giant.
Oh, that was good.
Thought, whew. Baby.
I need a cigarette.
Hurts. I know.
Oof.
Oh,
that was good.
Man.
Was it good for you?
I just need a salve or something to...
Man. Oh, okay. Okay.
That's good.
Okay, so
that's
Friday really is payday.
Payday.
And payday
paying
basically means you're paying it forward in some way. Now, in general, that could mean, you know, you go onto a forum and say, you know, like, and support someone in that way. Or
like tweet out a photo or tweet out a link to someone's amazing thing on their Etsy store or holler.
Share.
Like, give some love.
It's like, about sharing. And nothing is successful without a community.
Totally.
Community, like you look at anything that has become relevant, mm-hmm. and it's because there was a community holding it up. And so,
except for Kim Kardashian.
Kanye is the community behind that. and except for the show community. Unfortunately.
Oh, ironic. Yeah. Which is ironic.
So such a bummer.
Yeah.
Such a good show. But ultimately it's this idea of creating this sort of like positive stratum of our culture,
yeah.
and using the power for good. So Fridays from now on, we'll see how long this lasts, will be payday.
We can do
I
this.
Guess we should probably see if there's probably a payday subreddit.
r/payday.
And maybe it's just about the candy bar. You guys like the candy
big
bar?
Fans of the candy
My
bar.
My favorite thing is the white wrapper.
Yeah.
What, you mean snow?
Selfies eating the payday. Yeah, I think we get this going. I bet Wheaton, Will would be on board.
Will would
right?
be. Oh, Will be all over. Yeah. Will would all right. be all over.
We can. We'll organize. We'll get our nerd forces.
Let's do it, everybody. Glavin. Yeah. But yeah, because you know, one thing that Chloe's very mindful of is that if you know, if someone's she'll find something about people that she likes, and she'll say like, "Hey, your nails look really cool," or "That's a great sweatshirt," or "Hey, cool hat." You know, because it's just even on an incremental level. That can change the course of someone's day.
Absolutely.
It could change the course of their life.
Totally. I think back on so many of the little decisions. There's a great, I'm forgetting the Borges poem about this, Forking Paths, I think it's called. Anyway, I think about how really at the time inconsequential decisions have made such an impact on my life. Like when I was applying for UVA, first year or freshman year dorms, there's this random form that's like old dorms or new dorms. And it's this innocuous, just like you have a preference for like old school hallway style dorm or like new school suite style. And I chose old school for no reason other than I was like, yeah, okay. I move in and look across the hall and there's this blonde haired, blue eyed angel playing Gran Turismo. And I was so thrilled because I played video games growing up. I didn't think people played games in college. I didn't have any older siblings to tell me how college worked. So I was like, oh my God, this guy's, he's into games. I introduced myself. He says, I'm Steve. And I'm like, I'm Alexis. And I was so thrilled to see him. He was bummed because he then realized he was not living on a co-ed hall because he had seen my name on the door.
Oh,
and thought
yeah.
I was a girl. But we still became really good friends. And eventually talked him into starting a company with me, which would become Reddit. And if I hadn't checked that box, think about that checkbox all the time, because for whatever reason, it's still in my head, remembering like, yeah, I guess I'll go with old. If I had checked the new dorm box, or if I had ended up in any other hall in the old dorms, like I'd probably be an immigration lawyer right now, and there'd be no Reddit, and I wouldn't be here doing this podcast. And every one of us has these moments in our lives –
all of the people. I mean, you can get – I'm doing that AMA with my grandpa. I was hearing – you know, I was hearing him retell stories about what his family went through and these little decisions that happened that, you know, if, I mean, you can go. You can make movies about this stuff that put us on the course to end up here. And, like, it's crazy. So don't dwell on this too much unless you're high and then it's a really good time. But, like, really, the littlest things can make such a big impact. And I totally believe in that. So I'm very excited about this payday, man.
I'm excited about this too.
Precedent, man.
Do you want to plug your book real fast?
Oh, yeah, I guess so. I mean, so my publisher is at war with Amazon right now.
Okay.
So my book has been throttled. So get it on Barnes & Noble. or I've also been told it's called Without Their Permission, and I always have these college students on the tour sheepishly coming up to me saying, hey, what's up, dude? Like, listen, I don't have money to buy your book, but I downloaded it on the Pirate Bay, and they tell me this, and I'm just like, how dare you? No, I'm like, that's cool, man. It's all right. You're a college student. It's all right. It's not a lost sale. So I'm not endorsing downloading my book, but if you're strapped for cash or just don't want to spend the money, I am told it's available on the Pirate Bay, which is a good sign.
You wouldn't know that for sure.
I mean, how could you know? I'm not endorsing that. But I'll tell you, that's how I knew it was going to be a bestseller, was because it was on the Pirate Bay within 24 hours. And it's like, if you're willing to pirate a damn ebook, like, I must be doing something right. So that is what I have to say about that.
Excellent. Yeah. And maybe just one. People are fairly aware of you on Reddit. Like, they're aware of your.
Yes and no. I think it's at us. I mean, around 110 million people. Like, it's cool. Steve and I never made it about us. You could look at some of our former competitors.
So hard not to do that.
I know.
Someone starts stepping on your neck, and you're like, "Bitch, this is my house." What are you
Well, I think one of the things we got very right was we knew it was only gonna work if it was a platform for communities, and if a 500,000 communities were one day gonna use it, like the community at our Rainbow would have to feel ownership over that forum.
Of course. They wouldn't.
You know, our Black Ladies isn't there because me and Steve are there. Our competitor at the time, Dig, was started by all accounts, a very nice guy, Kevin, who I think was coming from a place of celebrity as a TV host and trying to build a forum that was essentially about him. Mm-hmm. Like, that community was essentially there for him and Dig Nation. And so there was a ceiling on that because there's only so many people who are going to want to be there for Kevin.
Right.
We knew if we're going to be a real platform, we'd have to be bigger and broader and make it about, at most, the alien, but not about me or Steve. So I take great pride in knowing, like, I'll comment on posts and people will downvote me and be like, how do you know that about the founding of Reddit?
Right.
And then someone else might chime in and be like, he's one of the founders.
That's funny. What you were talking about, Dig, about building around the platform around itself, and I'm like, Nerdist?
No, but you guys. But you are.
Did I do that? I think I might have done
no,
that.
But you're building a media company, right?
Well, I think we are. I mean, like, that's what I'm trying to do, and so I've been trying to bring on as, you know, a bunch of different voices, so it's not just me.
No. But like I said, I think it works in building a media company. If you're trying to build a platform, you're only going to have a ceiling, right? If, like, Twitter can't be about the founders of Twitter if you're going to have everyone in the world tweeting. Reddit can't be about the founders of Reddit if you're going to have everyone else. Like I said, we built the tools. We built the canvas. You guys are creating content. And
it's
a different, like, and so Kevin tried to take a model that would have been better suited towards creating content and creating a content empire than creating a platform.
Right. And I am, I'm very excited to, I wonder if I'm going to get karma for this interview. I feel like maybe I should.
People, I don't know. That's the other thing too, right?
I'm not going to post my own interview.
I'm just bracing you. You're probably not going to get a lot of upvotes for it. People will just be like, whatever.
You know, it doesn't matter though, because ultimately there is an R Nerdist that I don't run. Someone else runs it, and they do a great job.
Yeah, community, awesome.
And it's really nice. And I love watching where people take things. That's what meme culture is. It's going, how did you start here and get here? And it's like a bunch of people just chipped in. And then, you know, I mean, like, I spent 1 year, I went to the MIT, the puzzle hunt that they do. And I was so blown away by the sheer power of that experience. I was just like, okay, you guys are just doing this for no fucking reason. What if you took all of that brain power and focused it on hunger or something? Like, so the idea that, you know, if you focus enough, if you throw enough nerds at something, then eventually you'll figure it out, you know, like that to me That's what I, you know, besides watching the weird train of non sequiturs that happen on Reddit. But that's the other thing that excites me about it, is like, you know, if you throw a bunch of enough people at something, they'll fucking figure it out.
Well, and to that point, I'm glad you have that perspective. I think the content creators who will win are the ones who know that, like, once they create the message, once they create the content, they lose control of it. And that's always been the case, right? Like, whether people are talking at the water cooler about the episode of MASH they saw last night, or whether they're posting on our Game of Thrones about all of their, like,
why are you talking about MASH? I just woke up from a coma.
No, I'm saying, like, the old school, the old school at a water cooler. Right, yeah. MASH was the first. That was a TV show, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Interestingly,
yeah.
It's like 100 and it's, I think, the same number of users that Reddit has watched the finale of MASH.
Wow. Okay, that puts it in perspective.
Yeah, so MASH was one of the most popular shows in history.
And though those fans were limited by geography to basically geek out about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Today, right, there is, when the show goes off the air, the conversations can begin. And like it's amazing, like Game of Thrones, for instance, is a bit of a fan, right? There are people discussing it 24/7, creating new fan art and debates and quizzes and discussions. And the content producers that get that, like you're saying, like, you love seeing it and where it goes and where it spirals, realize, like, that's where the future heads. The more things you can kind of throw at your community to give them the excitement of feeling, like, involved or connected, the better, because they've always controlled the message. Like, at the end of the day, whether you sell, like, bottled water or whether you're producing content, like, media, you know, your customers are going to talk, your fans are going to speak, and they're going to connect. And the more that you can do to kind of give them cool stuff to mess with and acknowledge that, you know what, it's not mine anymore, the better.
Well, where do you think that, you know, like, as sort of as digital culture continues to subvert traditional media structure, where do you see, like, where do you see things going as audiences just kind of splinter and splinter more, and they, you know, they get stuff wherever they get it? And
I think, I mean, we're already seeing people are very, I guess it's like brand agnostic. Like, on the internet, the content you consume, it's coming from everywhere. And it could be a multi-billion dollar company that produced it, or it could be a little kid with an iPhone.
Yeah.
And there are still going to be, here's what it is. I think there's still going to be superstars, but there are going to be a lot more people kind of in the middle who historically would not have been able to make a living. Like, the idea of like content creators, and we can say, like, just creatives, artists, whatever, it was always binary. It was always you've either made it or you're a starving artist,
right,
or a starving creator, or starving whatever. And now, you know, the reason I invested in Patreon, the reason I think there's so much happening here, is because there's a middle ground. Like, there's a dude named Smooth McGroove who does a cappella video game theme songs videos on YouTube. He's a very talented a cappella singer, also owns a black cat, so we're, you know, you chummy like that.
Yeah.
Lives in Oklahoma, and he's already getting a few grand a month to produce these videos. And he distributes them for free. YouTube's made that trivial. And he has a following. He's not going to ever be Beyonce, but that's okay. Like, if he can make a living, like, every day, just producing, thinking about making great.
Well, it's the thousand
content?
True fans thing.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to appeal to
everybody.
You don't have to appeal to 300 million people and 350 million people in America. Huh. You can still. It's the nicheifying of our culture, basically. If you can appeal to enough of a community to support the thing that you want to do, then you can continue to do that thing.
And the fact that, like, the distribution part got solved by YouTube over the last 9 years, but the monetization has not. And I think it's going to be these kinds of micro-patronage platforms that are going to do it, because, like, what happens now when there's a world of Smooth McGrews who don't need to work freelance jobs or don't need to work as baristas or bartenders to sort of pay the bills in between making the stuff they really want to make? They can spend all of their time thinking about creating and making. Like, they're going to get their 10,000 hours, whether they play the ukulele, whether they do podcasts, or whether they do whatever, way faster. And so that's going to mean more people getting more skilled faster than ever at a broader – or in a broader way, like, more of them all over. And I think it's just going to mean just a lot of amazing content, much, much better content, and just really cool new stuff bubbling up. And instead of looking at trends, like, over the span of, like, years or months, it's going to be weeks and then days and then minutes. I mean, that's going to get crazy, right? Because there are – I mean, I already feel like if I miss a day of the internet, I miss a lot of stuff that has happened and sort of bubbled up in kind of pop culture. But that's only going to keep accelerating until it's just – it's going right into our brains every millisecond.
It's platforms to me that is – that I'm that I'm so curious to see how it all shakes out. And I don't know if it'll... I think we're so far into it at this point that it's not going to shake out in anything that resembles the traditional model at all.
Hell no.
It's like, oh, there's just a handful of...
Nope.
You know, it ultimately, you know, I think it's sort of like you said with trusted sources, people will find brands or organizations that are sort of there. Oh, this is my trusted source for this bit of
particular thing. Yeah.
And, you know, and the... then it's not about like television or internet. It's just like, oh, the delivery
just
system.
Stuff.
It's just stuff. It's just become stuff.
Yeah, man. And it's going to be, this change is happening right now. And then, oh, right. So then let's go a little step further. So I spent a lot of time with college students right on this tour. And there are a bunch. I'm always telling people learn to code, by the way. If you have any interest in technology or doing startups, you want to start the next Reddit or Hipmunk, learn to code. But there's a whole other segment who are humanities majors like me, history majors, or who maybe they want to do podcasting, or they want to play saxophone, or they want to just make cool videos. They never had a model, right? They've been growing up with this idea of, oh, right, it's either right, you've made it or you haven't. But as more and more examples, as more smooth McGrews kind of show up, those become role models to be like, wait, there's another way. Like, I can actually take time to start building an audience and start to make a living from it. And I could make a living making my crochet mug holders. I don't even know if that makes any sense. But like, they can start taking the things they're passionate about and actually see if there's a way to make money from it and maybe even make a living from it, instead of looking at that path of like, well, this is always going to have to be something that's like a hobby because you're either a starving artist or you're, you know, Beyonce.
Right.
And that's just going to mean more people who can now look at creation differently. Because they don't have to think about, well, you know, yeah, you've got a nice hobby, but you got to get a real job. And so you got to work in that 9-to-5 gig because those jobs aren't there. And the economy is still sorting itself out. And I hope the best comes out of it because there are some really talented people who we never used to get the best ideas from, who hopefully now will start getting a chance to do it.
Well, thank you very much for – not only thank you for being here, thank you for Reddit.
Oh, sure.
Thanks, Steve.
Sure, Steve too. Yeah.
And I would like to thank Skydart for giving me – user Skydart on Reddit for giving me the gift of Reddit. And, you know, I'm there. I'm in your community. So thank you, thank you, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me and for creating
payday. And I would – Fridays are payday from now on. Forever.
Tomorrow. I'm already thinking about what I'm going to do for tomorrow's payday.
And then I hope that, you know, that off podcast that we can catch up every so often.
Sure.
And just, you know, get to be pals.
Dude, I would love that.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm going to send the little care package.
Well, I would greatly appreciate it. I know she
awesome.
Would too.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much. Alexis, good to see you.
Thank you, Chris.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Enjoy your burrito.
I'm going to create that right now.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now, in hardcover or digital editions, wherever you get your books.